and welcome back to another episode of the Newtown Big Dreams podcast. This is number 227. It is June the 11th, 2021. It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And today I'm with Sheila Farragher Gemma. She is in Millis, Massachusetts. And Sheila is the founder of Connected Sponsors. And she is a strategic partner expert. So one of the things I love about this show is I get to ask people how they do what they do. And I get to speak to so many interesting people from all over the planet doing all kinds of different things. And I learned a ton from Sheila about how to create strategic partnerships. We've already got these people and organizations in our lives, all of us do. So it's a question of recognizing these opportunities and making strategic partnerships with them. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about sponsorship assets, some of the things that we already possess as business owners that sponsors will pay good money to access those assets. So let's welcome Sheila to the show right after this.
Welcome to the Newtown Big Dreams podcast, an interview-style talk show that's your gateway to the fabulous and fascinating people who relocated to start a new life. Whether you're new to our podcast or your city, our fellow neighbors from across Canada, North America, and the entire English-speaking world share their stories of reaching new horizons and big dreams. So sit back and relax as we navigate in-depth and intimate conversations with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, executives, creatives, and anyone who can share their story about their Newtown big dreams. And now, here's your host, Luke J. Menkes.
Sheila F.G., welcome to the show today. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really pleased to be here, Luke.
So you moved to the States in 1989, and you live in a place called Millis, Massachusetts. Tell us the story. Where did you come from in 1989?
So I came from Ireland. 1989 was a big recession in Ireland. I was just finishing my degree in college, and I got an offer of a green card. Actually, my father got an offer of a green card, or he applied for, there was a senator over here, Senator Donnelly, who was literally like giving away green cards. And he applied for all of the family, and myself, my sister, and my mother got one. He didn't originally, but he ended up getting one as well eventually. So I just applied for jobs all over the States. I got accepted to a job in Boston, which is close to where Millis is, and came over, but never thought that I was like moving over or anything like that. I just thought it was for a year and I would go home again, which I never did.
Right. So tell us about Millis. Where is it? I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, Millis is it's a small town. It's one of the M towns. There's a road that has a whole bunch of M towns kind of in a row. It's close to Gillette Stadium, which is probably the biggest landmark. It's probably about 10 minutes from Gillette. So any Patriot fans or I can't think of the soccer team now, but any fans like that would love that. They've also built a whole shopping area around Gillette. So it's like a fun place to go and have dinner and walk around and people watch and stuff like that as well. So probably about 25 and 30 miles outside of Boston.
Okay. And before I forget, can you tell us, are there any U.S. senators that you know of that are giving out green cards now?
No, not that I know of. I mean, and I have no idea who Senator Donnelly is, but thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You changed my life.
That's awesome. Yeah. And what is the status of the COVID lockdowns in Millis, Boston? What's it like?
So it's not bad now at all. We're we're recording here, I hope that's okay to say, in June 11th. It's pretty much open. You can choose whether you want to wear a mask or not if you're vaccinated. You see probably half the people not wearing masks, half the people wearing masks. Restaurants are at full capacity. People are starting to have weddings and things like that. So it's definitely starting to change and become more normal or more like it was a long time ago. So it feels like a long time ago.
Great to hear. I talk to people all over the world, and it's a little bit different in every single place. So I always ask, and you know, I'm curious. So that's great to hear. So tell us, Sheila, how did your burning desire to be home with your kids shape your entrepreneurial career?
I mean, I didn't really realize I had a burning desire until I was pregnant with Aisling, who's my eldest daughter. And I just knew all the time I was pregnant with her, I was working in a big pharmaceutical firm outside of Boston as well. And I just knew that I didn't want to go back afterwards. I didn't want to, you know, have her in daycare 8 or 10 hours a day while I worked, essentially just to probably pay for daycare. So I wanted to create something that would allow me to be home and be there for all the important things, like, you know, serving lunch or the school parties or, you know, soccer, dance recitals or any of this kind of stuff. But also to be able to, you know, make a living and support us as well. So that was kind of the desire.
I like the concept because I notice when my kids get home from school, when I'm finished work, everybody's pretty tired. So it's kind of, you miss all that entire energy time. People who work full time out of the home. So what, when you're looking at work from home options, what are the vital aspects to consider?
So for me, it's more about just being present in whatever moment you're in. So if you're working, try and carve out some time that you're working. Actually, once the kids started getting in, you know, once they were kind of 2 and 3, I actually had them in daycare for a few hours during the day just so that I could focus on work. And, you know, when they were home, then be totally present. I used to try and do it all. I used to try and multitask. And next thing I catch myself kind of yelling at them because they were making noise because I was on a phone call. And I was like, hang on, this is not right. They're home. Right. They have every right to be playing and making noise and doing whatever. Yeah. So I really tried to kind of divide my time so that I could have the time that I needed to have. And then I could, you know, when I was with them, I was truly with them. So initially I did it by hiring somebody to come help me in the house. And she kind of kept them, you know, occupied while I was working. And then I, you know, had them in daycare, which was good for them socially as well. You know, they started meeting other little kids and stuff like that. So that was kind of the way I did it. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but it kind of worked out for us. So.
Right. That sounds great. So you're the founder of something called Connected Sponsors. Tell us what Connected Sponsors is.
So Connected Sponsors is the latest business. I've had like a roll of different businesses and stuff. So I've been doing that for probably about 10 years. And what I do is I help platform owners find sponsors for their platform. So mainly around events, but also around podcasts or newsletters, things like that. And in the last year, kind of with COVID and everything, I've pivoted a little bit and I'm doing more consulting than actually going out and finding sponsors for people. And I've created like trainings around that as well so that people can learn how to do it for themselves.
Okay. So you mentioned that mentorship and personal development has played a big role in the success of Connected Sponsors. Tell us a little bit about that.
For me, personal development is like, you know, it was all new to me. Just starting my first business was new to me. You know, I really kind of sought people who kind of had taken the path before me so that I could learn from them. And I'm always curious, like, you know, how are you doing this? Why are you doing it? Why are you doing this way and not that way? I feel like we can learn a lot from people who are just kind of a little bit ahead of us. And sometimes even people who are not quite there yet as well. But I'm always looking for, you know, what's something new or something different or something that I haven't seen. Like, do you ever get like one of those blinding flashes of the obvious? You suddenly like, oh my gosh, I've been doing this 8-step process that you know, Luke is doing in 1 step. How do you do that? You know, so things like that. And then mentorship. I have you know, worked with coaches in the past. I've been part of masterminds, and you know, that's mentorship. But to me as well, being an entrepreneur, it can be a very lonely spot. So having people that like get me, you know, because a lot of people don't get like what we are, and you know, having people that get me makes a big difference as well. So you can start having a conversation. They're not like, hang on, I don't understand. You do what? Right. You know, so it's just you always know when you find like one of your people, it's suddenly the energy goes way up and you're like talking back and forth, and it's awesome.
Yeah. Have you been doing Zoom calls with your mentors and colleagues, or are you able to be in person now?
So a lot of the people I talk to are actually not local anyway. So, I have one group that we meet every Friday morning. Today's Friday, so we met this morning, and it's probably become the most important meeting of my week. It's four other people that we kind of all met by accident. We were all on this like larger call, and people started dropping off. And now for the last like probably 3 months or so, it's just, you know, the four of us religiously every Friday, and it's gotten to the point where we're kind of pretty intimate. Like, we're very vulnerable. We really kind of know each other at this point, and we all have different strengths and weaknesses. So like they actually mentioned it this morning as well, but we all kind of walk away getting a lot from it. And it's just like a really great safe place that you can just be like, oh my gosh, I'm having like the worst day and this is happening, or I'm having the best day and this is happening. And, you know, I think that's really important for people to have that kind of a network, however you get it. Maybe it's like somebody in your town, but maybe it isn't. Maybe it's you know, people that you meet in Zoom that you may never actually meet in person.
Right.
Hopefully we will, but.
Yeah. So you talk a lot about strategic partnerships and sponsorships. Why should entrepreneurs like us be leveraging these things?
I mean, the simple reason is because it's there for you. And I think people don't realize it. It's when you look at, just to kind of give you a little bit about my history. When I started that first business, I joined BNI, which is Business Network International. Yes. So it's probably where you are. It's we all have over the, like anyone I talk to is like, oh, I know about BNI.
Yeah.
but to me, it was really eye opening. I couldn't believe that, you know, the first time I went to a meeting that this room of strangers were looking to help me, you know, with my business. I was like, wow, this is like unbelievable. And it just kind of showed me that like, if you can find people that, you know, have a similar business to you, but not the same, they're not in competition. And I believe in an abundance. So I don't feel like there's like huge competition anyway, but that you guys can, you know, in a symbiotic way, you can help each other and lift each other up and pass referrals or whatever it is. I just think that that is such a quicker way to growth than trying to do everything as an individual and on your own. And sometimes people looking in on you and your life will see something that you're blind to because you've got your blinders on and you just don't realize it. And just being able to, like, again, have that sounding board, there's like so many benefits, and this isn't even talking sponsorship yet. It's like, there's so many benefits to that. And my thought with sponsorship is that, you know, if done correctly, it really is a strategic partnership as well. If you have, like, I work a lot in events. So if you are an event owner and the audience are coming to you because they're looking for some sort of transformation, if you can supply the resources that they need to get there as well. So you're teaching them whatever it is that you're teaching them, maybe investing in real estate or passive income or something like that. And then you can provide the resources that are going to help, or the tools that are going to help them get there as well. It just becomes this huge symbiotic, you know, the sponsors coming in, they're getting access to more people that are, you know, their target. And then you, as the event owner or the host, you're bringing value to your people, but you're also monetizing it as well. So it just becomes this like really nice win-win-win type of situation. So it just, you know, people, when they see it, they kind of get it. I think a lot of people tend to feel, well, I'm just little Joe Schmo and I have my little business here, but they're at every level, there's those opportunities. So it's just a matter of kind of being aware of them and looking for them.
Yeah. Can you tell us some other ways besides holding events that we could seek out and get sponsors?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's for your podcast, if you have once, the whole thing is kind of working from the back, working from the end backwards. So you want to know who your audience is. So know who's have a good idea of the avatar on your podcast, and then, you know, figure out what it is, like, what are they coming to you for and what is it that they need in their lives? And then you can go out and seek sponsors and say, you know, I have, you know, X number of this type of person who's listening to me every week or every day or however often you run your podcast. Do you think that's something that you'd like to get in front of? And then just start mm-hmm. having the conversation. How would that look? You know, what would make this a no-brainer for you? And just kind of make it, again, win-win for everyone.
Yeah, that's great. So with COVID, I know a lot of us have been using automation more and more mm-hmm. and outsourcing more and more.
Yep.
Because it was hard to meet in person with people, and the technology has really taken off in even just 18 months as far as
it's totally different.
So tell us some of the ways that you've used automation and outsourcing.
So with automation, I try and look at everything I do and see if there's a way. I try and do everything only once if I can. If it's right. any kind of a repetitive task, I try and see is there a way to either set up a system for it or find a software, or find a way to automate it so that it's not it's not the best use of my time coming in and doing stuff like that. And mm-hmm. then the other thing I've used is when it does need a person is to hire for it. I've hired a lot of VAs, which I love having a VA because, you know, you commit to a certain amount of hours with them per week. Mm-hmm. and you're not like hiring somebody full time that now you're, you know, scratching your head going, what am I going to have them do right. now? I don't want them to be sitting there not doing anything or bored or not engaged in what they're doing. So I've just found both of those things really good. And I'm always again, seeking and looking and, you know, having conversations with people and how do you do this and what do you use? And, you know, cause there's whatever way I'm doing it, there's definitely a better way as well. So
oh, sure.
I'm always curious about that.
Is it easy to find a good VA? Do you have to spend a lot of time like screening them?
Yeah, I mean, it's like hiring anyone. You probably do need to spend a lot of time screening them, but more importantly is you need to spend a lot of time setting them up for success.
Yeah.
So again, especially as entrepreneurs, we have this all in our head and it's like, yeah, you just do the thing and the thing and then do this. And they're just like, hang on, start from the beginning again.
Yeah.
So if you can just kind of really simplify it and be very clear on what it is that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, good thing with VAs or with anyone really, is start to have them document what they're doing and how they're doing it.
Yeah.
So that now you start beginning to build up SOPs or standard operating procedures so that if somebody else was to come in to try and do that, at least they have kind of a framework of yeah. what it is that you're looking for. But I think one of the things that entrepreneurs do is they abdicate versus delegate, and it's, you know, it's not fair on anyone. They're right. not happy with the results, and the poor person trying to get them the results is not happy either. So
yeah, it reminds me of a book I wrote 12 years ago, and my co-author was saying we have to document everything, and I found it really tedious and annoying, but I'm really yep. glad I did. And mm-hmm. what he explained to me was you can actually, with that documentation, you can turn that into a book, like a how-to book.
Yeah.
So, for example, my podcast, I'd really love to get a virtual assistant because there's so many repetitive tasks, right? Booking, putting it on the calendar, setting up this studio here with Riverside, you know, doing the biography, the show notes, all these things. And I don't really remember, like I just do it automatically. So like you said, we really have to set up the virtual assistant for success. But once that's done and documented, I could produce a short book, you know, how to run a very successful podcast.
Yep.
Because it's all there.
Yeah. And not only could it be great for your staff, but you could also sell it to like someone like me who's thinking of starting a podcast. I would mm-hmm. pay good money for that if right. I could just get step it all written down that, you know, this is how you do it. So yeah, that's awesome. It's hugely tedious, especially for like if you're entrepreneurial, just like having to pay attention to something like that for any extended length of time is like brutal for us, but so worth it at the end.
Totally. Yeah. I love having the conversations, and I wish I didn't have to spend so much time, you know, typing things.
Yeah.
Copying and pasting.
Yeah, but even, you know, another tip for it as well is maybe just mic yourself up when you're doing a task and just talk yourself through it. You know, so now I'm going to do the editing. So I hit this first and just talk about what you're doing, get it transcribed, and then have someone go in and clean it up.
That's not going to be a great idea. I'm going to do that today. Because, you know, I've been hesitating to hire a VA because it's like, well, now I have to think of all the steps and try to explain it.
Exactly. Like, and it's almost like more work than just doing it yourself. But then you get caught in the trap of just doing it yourself. It's like, I don't know if you've read E-Myth, but that's all about that. It's like you become the technician and there's no way out.
Yeah. So I love that idea. Mic myself up and just talk through it and it'll be all there.
And the other one as well is if you're doing screenshots of stuff, get OBS or Loom, I think is one of them, or any of these screen capture things. There's a lot of them out there for free, and just
talk over
through it as you're actually doing it. Now you have a video and you can just say to them, I need you to do this. This is how you do it, and walk away. Hopefully not quite walk away, but
that's great. In every interview, I try to get one great idea for myself. It's awesome. Very selfish. But
hopefully it
benefits the audience too. But that's really great. That's awesome. So tell us about networking, because most of us know networking is so important, but we don't really know how to do it. And we're not very efficient at it. You know, we've got our daily routine. How do we leverage networking? What's a good way to do that?
It's important to do that for sure. And it's something that, so when I was growing up, it's something that kind of, I saw at home a lot. My parents are entrepreneurial, and my mom especially, every time, you know, she'd hear that so-and-so just got placed in college or just, you know, qualified as, you know, in tourism or something like that, she'd turn around to my dad and say, Mick, who do we know in the hotel industry? And then start going back and forth. And next thing, this poor child that I don't know who was, you know, had a whole career planned out for them by my mother. But it's important to do. I don't really have kind of a format for it, but just again, think of the people that you're working with, that you've seen on a regular basis. You know, you always want to try and go in giving first. So if I hear, you know, I recently heard that somebody had just published a book. So immediately I started thinking, okay, who could I introduce him to get some more eyes on his book type of thing, or get him on some podcast, things like that. So always kind of be given first, and then, you know, there's reciprocity with that. The other thing that for me has helped, I'm actually very introverted, believe it or not. So one of the things I learned in BNI was to, when you go to a networking event, in your head, pretend it's your event and you're the host and you have to go and like make sure everyone feels welcome. Right. So next thing you're walking around, you're like, hey, you know, how's it going? And you once you take on that persona, you're no longer kind of standing there going, oh, I don't know what to say to people. It's like you just kind of make the assumption that they feel the same way and just start, you know, talking to them. And as they say something, say, oh, you should really meet Patty over here or whatever, and just kind of bring them over and introduce them and just act like a host. So that's kind of one of the main things I do to myself when I enter a room that I don't know many people.
That is another great tip, because I'm an introvert and all I've ever done is, well, I have to do this. So I try to psych myself up. And I go do it, but just that simple.
It's exhausting, isn't it? Come back afterwards.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
But that simple mindset, this is my event, then I know exactly what to do, right?
Yeah.
I introduce people, I welcome them. And that's
you go over to the other person standing on their own and, you know, bring them into conversation, then draw them into the crowd and then go find somebody else. And
Love it. So what types of businesses benefit from these strategic partnerships? Tell us maybe about some of your clients without, you know, revealing what you're not allowed to reveal, but tell us some of the people you work with.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first part of the question, I think any business can benefit from strategic partnerships. Okay. You do real estate, right?
Yes.
I'm sure you work with a mortgage broker.
Yes.
And you may work with like a stager, a home inspector, all these kind of things. Mm-hmm. Like those are all strategic partnerships. You build up like your little kind of clan of the people that you know and trust. And it's just you guys are passing business back to each other all day long. A lot of the people I work with run events, as I've mentioned before. So it's really kind of looking at, you know, who their audience is for the event, again, what transformation they're looking for, and then what are the best sponsors to bring into that. Mm. So that, you know, with an event, I kind of vision it as, you know, they're in a ballroom somewhere learning something from the guru on stage, and then they come out and they walk into literally like a mall of vendors who are resources for them, so that they can, you know, go around and get help with whatever it is that they need to kind of progress their business forward.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like there's so many different types, and it's just a matter of being kind of creative and imaginative and trying to find that win-win so that everyone's kind of benefiting.
Right. Sheila, you sold a business, I believe, and tell us how you figured that out.
Yeah.
How did you figure out how to do that?
The first one was Absolute Dumb Luck. So I had, mm-hmm. it was the first business I started when Aisling was born. It was a laser printer repair and toner manufacturing business. Mm-hmm. It had a big auspicious name, Shamrock International Inc. And the ink was INK, because I wasn't even incorporated. But I had that for about 8 years. And towards the end, I actually started two businesses fairly simultaneously. And I was just like, I was really worn out. I also had two people working in that business, and both of them within a few weeks gave notice. One was going back to California, one was going back to school. And I was like, you know, I think I'm just going to shut it down. And then I just had the idea. I had somebody who was in competition with me, and I called her up and I was like, hey, I'm thinking of selling. Are you interested? And she's like, yeah, maybe. So, you know, I ended up selling her the business, which was, you know, I was planning on walking away from it. So that was like definitely a bonus to do that.
Yeah.
And then the second one I had was one of the ones that I was starting as I was exiting that business. It was a kids' indoor playground. Okay. And I ran that with my husband for about 5 years. And he's a firefighter. So he got onto the fire department and kind of like left me for his fire department. Mm-hmm. And so I got ready and started selling that as well. But that I kind of went to a broker and started, you know, it was more of a planned event than just like a random phone call and dumb luck. So I definitely recommend the second way over the first way, but yeah, both kind of worked out, but you got to put it out there. You never know.
You never know. And how did you figure out the valuations of these businesses?
With the first one, she made me an offer and I was like, okay. And she said, so can you send me up your QuickBooks? And I need to go through it with my accountant and everything. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. I sent her everything up. Mm-hmm. And she came back to me and she's like, yeah, thanks for sending everything. The offer is now half. And I was like, okay. Because, you know, I thought I was getting nothing. So, you know, it was all good for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how she figured out that valuation. Usually it's like a multiple of SDE. So that's seller discretionary income. So basically whatever as a business, unless you're kind of a bigger corporation, but whatever as a business owner, you're pulling out of the business yourself, you know, as salary or expenses or whatever. Mm-hmm. So usually it's kind of maybe a one or two multiple of that in general, I would say, for kind of smaller businesses.
Okay. One or two times annual multiple.
But annual, not of like the total sales or
no,
the profit.
No, yeah. It's like just kind of as a business owner.
Yeah, because a lot of times in businesses like that, you know, they're maybe buying to come in and replace you in the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more you can make your business more EMIT, the more that it isn't kind of based on you, that it runs on its own, that you could, mm-hmm. you know, literally be for a year and it would still be running when you come back and maybe even more profitable.
Yeah.
That, you know, the more attractive that is, obviously, but.
Right.
Yeah.
So public events, like even though I'm an introvert, I like attending these, you know, every so often.
Yeah. They're
very exhausting, but I do enjoy them. a lot of people don't understand. Introvert doesn't mean that you don't like people. It just means that it takes a lot of energy out of you.
It does take a lot of energy. Yeah. Unless you meet those people that are like your people, you know, like I was saying earlier in the interview. But yeah, it does. It gets exhausting. Like even after this, I'll just kind of go and sit and have a cup of tea and be like, wow, that was a lot.
Yeah, right.
So tell us nothing personal, but
yeah, no, exactly. So tell us how things have changed since COVID with the events business.
So I remember being on the phone and on Zooms back last March, like March 2020, with other event planners and event owners and stuff. And you know, the question was like, what are we going to do? And a lot of new technology popped up. A lot of virtual platforms. Some people built these massive virtual studios, like Tony Robbins is infamous for I think he has a 100,000 person like studio, like virtual studio that he built.
Wow.
Yeah, that was incredible. I mean, it's just like all these monitors with, like, you know, all the Muppet Show kind of things on each one. So it definitely has changed. And I think it's, you know, I think any change is often for the better, even though, you know, COVID was awful and the whole thing was awful, but it kind of like stirred up a lot of the industry as well. I feel like going forward that there's going to be a virtual component to most events. Because you don't necessarily, like, I'm really looking forward to getting back to live events and being in a room with other people and all of that good stuff. But you don't necessarily need it. And sometimes, you know, you can do it from home or do, you know, a virtual component to it. And I think you're going to get more of an audience and you may get more people who would just prefer to be there. I think there's a lot to be said for the networking of being at an actual event. But the way virtual events have come on in that, like, I mean, it's a huge difference between where they were in March of 2020 and where they are today. They've, you know, now built in components for networking and, you know, shooting you into rooms where you're talking with other people and giving some questions to answer. So it's kind of a guided thing. You know, it's just phenomenal. I remember prior to COVID, any kind of a live stream was usually like a stationary camera in the back of a ballroom. And it just, like, that's all you saw, you know, there was nobody even like talking to you or anything. It was just like, you know, you saw the speakers and then when they were on break, you just like saw random people walking past and stuff. So, you know, I think that's all going to change for the better.
Yeah. I think the technology has definitely improved, and my preference going forward is we can have a combination of, remote things. You can attend more things if you can do it remotely. As long as the, you know, it's not crappy cinematography or whatever, and you're seeing someone across a distant room, you know, if it's good audio, good video, then we can definitely attend much more.
Right.
But I still want to see people in person once in a while.
Yeah. I'm the same as well, you know, so I think a combination, but, like, you know, there's only so much you can travel to and only so many events you can go to, but there is an opportunity to, you know, sit at home like this. I'm in my office just, you know, sitting here talking to you. Didn't have to travel anywhere.
Exactly. So tell us some of the mistakes that you see in the industry that are made with sponsorships.
So I think the biggest mistake is when people are looking for sponsors is they don't have a what's in it for them attitude. So them, the sponsor. I think you have to come at it from a position of bringing value versus looking for someone to sponsor your event and give you money. If you do that, if you come at it from a position of bringing value and create that, like, baseline relationship right up front, I think it's way more sustainable. The sponsor is getting a lot more out of it. And because he's getting a lot more out of it, he's just going to keep coming back year after year.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen sponsorships where, you know, I'm exaggerating, but they were like in a lobby in a hotel down the street from the hotel where the event was on and nobody knew they were there. You know, it's not quite that bad, but it can be. You know, so just really kind of like the sponsors are, they're coming in, they're paying good money, and, you know, they're really creating the ability for you to have a much bigger event and a better event because now it's better monetized. So you really want to make sure that they are, you know, that you're just thankful to them and you're treating them well and you're making sure that their needs are taken care of. And, you know, that they're, if for whatever reason they're not getting the traffic they thought they were going to get, let's jump in there and do something to try and make that happen for them. So you really just want to kind of not forget about them once that check is cashed.
Right. And I think you would probably agree that even if everything seems to go perfectly and you delivered everything you promised, it's still good to ask for feedback. And how can we improve on this?
Absolutely. How can we improve on this? And just like make sure, like, even if you deliver on everything, maybe it wasn't, you weren't delivering the right things. And maybe they didn't know coming in either. Like sometimes, you know, we usually have maps of where the booth locations are and someone will pick something off a map. And they get to the event and they're like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, the traffic just isn't even coming here. So just jump in immediately and fix it. Do something, like get a popcorn machine over there so everyone smells popcorn and starts wandering over, or, you know, whatever you need to do. But it's just like be proactive. I'm all about, like, if something's going wrong, don't try and kind of put your head in the sand or hide it. Let's just like face it straight on and fix it as quickly as possible and make sure everyone stays happy.
Oh, sure. And even if people are happy and they're thrilled with it, it's good for them to say that out loud. It kind of reinforces.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah.
You know, Sheila was awesome. We had a great time. Everything was great. It's good when they say it because they're more likely to remember it and talk about it. So,
and take it one step further as well. Two things, like if they're happy at the event, I mean, that's when you pull out the paperwork for next year and say, mm-hmm. so are you guys coming back next year and just co-sign here? But the second thing is get that in video. Those are great testimonials to have for when you're, you know, looking at a new sponsor that you may not know that well and say, well, this is what, you know, Luke thought of it and he's coming back year after year. And I think it would be great for you too.
For sure. And a third thing you might do is ask for a referral. In that moment,
yeah,
when they're thrilled with you, do you know anybody in this industry that I should also talk to? Right,
exactly. Yeah, and they know because if they're sponsoring your event, they're probably sponsoring other events.
Yes,
so they, you know, they become like a kind of a clique of traveling sponsors, and they go to similar events. They meet afterwards and go for drinks, and they're passing people back and forth to the booths and stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely ask for referrals. That's a great way to bring in more sponsors.
Yes. So you have a great website. It's called connectedsponsors.com. Tell us about your website, what we can find there.
Yeah, so I have actually, I put together one of the questions I get a lot is I don't know how to find sponsors. So this comes from BNI. We do a lot of those, I'm not even in BNI anymore, but we used to do a lot of visitor days. And one of the things BNI thought was to follow your checkbook. So if you're looking for other businesses, what businesses are you currently doing business with and see if they want to come into BNI? So I put together a worksheet. It's actually kind of, it's online, but it's editable. And it has a video in there kind of training as well. But it's basically that follow your checkbook. So if you are doing an event, if you have a newsletter or whatever, you look at the things and the resources that you use to do what you do and see if these would be a good resource for your listeners as well, your listeners, your audience, your students. And it's just the one sheet is just kind of a way you can go in, you can start brainstorming ideas and stuff like that. And you come up with like a nice little list of maybe 20 or 30 prospective companies that you can then go out to and see if there will be some sort of interest in sponsoring you.
Well, thank you very much, Sheila. My two biggest takeaways is I'm going to start documenting my workflow. And for two reasons, I'm going to hire a virtual assistant. And then as I tweak it, I'm going to produce a how-to manual.
Yep. And then you're going to call me and say, I did it.
I'm going to call you and
here
say,
it is.
Here's the link to Amazon or whatever it is.
Yep, exactly. But,
I'll give you a beta version because you came on the show.
Okay,
and that's
awesome.
Really great. And I'm going to take a look at that worksheet at connectedsponsors.com because I am moving to the next phase of this podcast. So I want to grow
it. And once you get on there, you'll have your email put in. So you'll get some emails from me. But like I read all of those and respond to a lot of them. So feel free to be like, hey, I'm really stuck here. What do you think I should do? And I'll come back with an answer for sure.
Excellent. Thanks for your time today, Sheila. I really appreciate it.
Luke, it was great. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Newtown Big Dreams podcast with your host, Luke Menkes, and his authentic guests. And we love our listeners and hope you subscribe now to learn more about the amazing journeys of our incredible guests who relocated to find a Newtown Big Dreams. And remember, make your dreams big.